You'll remember at the end of Canto 3, Dante swoons, and at the beginning of Canto 4, he awakes. He says, like coming to first thing in the morning. But the strange thing, he's now on the other side of the Acheron River, and it's unclear how he got there. And this sets up an air of mystery and expectation almost in the fourth canto, which turns out to be very, very significant. It's one of the cantos where Dante really shows that either he's working received wisdom into something new, or, as I think is the case, he has received new insight, new vision, new understanding into the Christian dispensation, which is starting to greatly expand it and take it beyond what most of his contemporaries and even most many people today might assume. It's one of the really brilliant things about the Divine Comedy that when you go on this journey, you start to become capable of understanding a lot more than just, say, the creedal formula is or the accepted understanding of things can allow. The first thing, though, that Dante notices is that in this part of hell, Virgil at first goes very pale, and this panics Dante again. He returns very quickly to his uncertainty and doubt, to his fear. And he says to Virgil, "How can I not fear if you fear?" But Virgil says, "Actually, do you know, it's not fear that's making me go pale, it's pity." And I think what this is saying is that Virgil feels both the compassion for those who are trapped in hell. He knows what lies before them. But at the same time, he knows that he doesn't fully understand what hell's about. And so that combination of compassion and not knowing is what makes him go pale. He's full of uncertainty about the place that he finds himself in. And yet at the same time, he feels the uncertainty of those around him as well. What is this place about? What are its mysteries? Those who are suffering, those who are suffering more or less, what does this all mean for them? And so again, Virgil's turning pale and Dante's suggesting it's fear suggests that if we can, as it were, tolerate looking, you might say, tolerate seeing, we might see something else in this beginning to unfold in this part of hell. So they enter now the first circle of hell proper. You know, we've been on the threshold, we've been in the kind of vestibule of hell. Now we've crossed the Acheron River and we're in the first circle proper. And this is the circle known as Limbo. Limbo, Virgil says, is the place where those who haven't known baptism, and so therefore no desire without hope, this is where they dwell. Now, limbo is a very difficult concept. In fact, in 2007, the Catholic Church officially abandoned limbo, a really important point which we're going to come back to. But you might say this is kind of still Hell 101, and this is where Dante might begin in his capacity to understand what's unfolding before him, the sort of what people around him thought, what the church taught, what he might, as it were, have heard from a priest on a Sunday morning or heard proclaimed by a bishop. And it's that those who haven't been baptized can't be saved, and in order, though, that God doesn't seem completely monstrous, relatively speaking, the idea is that they end up in limbo. This is the beginning of hell. It's kind of like hell's most least tortuous bit, where people are only troubled by the fact that they desire more of God and yet don't have the hope for God, because in the official teaching they didn't know baptism, they didn't know Christ. But immediately something more starts to emerge, and it's captured in the second sense in which Dante gets troubled about Virgil going pale. It's the sense in which can Virgil's understanding, you might say, can poetic understanding, or can the received understanding of the church really help them through the experience that's going to unfold before them? Remember, Dante is really relying upon his master. He regards Virgil as his external guide, as he's learning to trust his inner guide. And so at this point, early in his journey, he's still really dependent upon Virgil. And it's almost as if he's wondering whether Virgil's understanding is enough after all, in spite of the reassurances from Beatrice and Lucia and the Virgin Mary. Is this going to be enough to take him forward? And the implication is that, in a way, it isn't. Not because he's going to be lost. In fact, this is a comedy. God is behind it all. God is sustaining it all. But in another way, his understanding and his poetry isn't going to be enough, because it's going to have to extend beyond what it's been capable of previously. And of course, that in itself generates its own uncertainty. If we think we've got something, or we've got the ability to understand it, but quickly we start to see that maybe we haven't, we're going to be asked to expand or grow. That in itself causes fear. And I think it's something of this fear which Dante is experiencing now as well. Because indeed, Limbo is going to be different from what he imagines, according to Hell 101. And it's a heavy learning, he says. You know, there isn't the screams and torments in Limbo, but there are sighs. There's a kind of weightiness to the place. And I think it's because what Dante's trying to do, or what he's realising he's got to embrace, are the tensions of kind of two poles. On the one hand, there's the need to respect individual people's freedom. You remember that will plays a really massive part in the Divine Comedy. And this is the will of where we choose to turn. Do we choose to turn towards what's good or what's not good? This is the freedom that makes for our individuality, that means that we can travel through the whole cosmos, physical and spiritual, consciously, because we've made choices. We have a kind of responsibility for what we see and what we don't see, by where we choose to turn, what we try to embrace or what we refuse. So that freedom's really important. But at the same time, it's already been intimated that God's love is in fact what moves everything through the cosmos, even in hell, as the gates of hell reminded Dante. And so there's a tension there. You know, how can, as it were, the love that shapes all things sit alongside the freedom of the individual? And the trick, I think, is not to try and resolve that polarity, but to live with the tension, and in the tension see what might emerge. You might say that this canto is one that really starts to respect seriously what Dante is capable of imagining, and asking him to imagine more than previously he has been capable. And it comes up particularly in this business of limbo, being for those who haven't been baptised, because to put it more sort of in a more subtle, more deeper way, and it's even captured in this phrase that Virgil uses, it's those who have known baptism. What that means is that those who have lived in a time where the bigger imagination, which Dante is going to be moving into, whether has that even been disclosed? Has that even been revealed? Was it even possible, you might say, for ancient Greeks, ancient Romans, such as Virgil, to imagine what is now going to be unfolded before Dante's eyes? And in a sense, it wasn't capable of them imagining it. You'll remember in earlier cantos, we've already had Virgil indicating that he understands things according to the old heroic standards, particularly of Aeneas in the Aeneid that he wrote, but also coming from Homer. And this requires an individual to be kind of morally upright, even in the face of the greatest calamity, the greatest death, so that the gods can honour them as heroes. But Dante, he's already learned by his recollection of Paul that the Christian dispensation is different. This is actually about spiritual comprehension. It's about seeing and sight. It's where the individual is now capable of being almost alongside the divine, which in a way is the meaning of the incarnation. So this is a new kind of consciousness. And moving into that new consciousness, having the imagination to grapple with it and to grasp it, is one of the things which gets played out in Limbo. Now let me be a bit more specific and try and show how that happens. What next occurs to Dante, that Virgil shows him, is what's known as the harrowing of hell. And this is the old story that after Jesus died on the cross and before he rose again on Easter Sunday, he descended into hell and saved people in hell. But the question is, who does he save? The standard story was that he saved, say, the old patriarchs in the Old Testament, and those who had foreseen Christ but hadn't been able to receive salvation there and then because the new dispensation hadn't arrived. As it were, the spiritual apparatus to see and understand the new dispensation hadn't been fully formed, which it couldn't have been until the way he'd actually been lived by Jesus. But now that it has been lived by Jesus, Jesus can go to hell and save those who were the forebears of what Jesus now has fully brought about. But what it also raises is the possibility that people can be saved even if they found themselves in hell. And Dante says he asks Virgil cautiously, does this mean that the one can save? And that's the allusion to Jesus. They never used the names of Jesus or God in hell. Out of fear and trepidation, you know, for overstepping the mysteries that they're involved in. Can the one save, or might another save? I think this is Dante alluding to how he, in a way, has already been saved by the prayers of the Virgin Mary, calling on Lucia, sending Beatrice. He's already realising that his salvation is a lot more complicated than just, as it were, Jesus's fiat. And so he's wondering here, I think, is something much more subtle and complicated going on, of which the harrowing of hell, the fact that people can get saved from hell, is a sort of foretaste. Where will that harrowing end? Where will that rescue end? And sure enough, they start to notice a hemisphere of light coming towards them. Now, this is very striking because, of course, they're in hell now, the first circle. There are no stars, there's no sun, so there's no natural light. What light there is can only come from the light of the intellect, the light that the souls and the angels there themselves can bring, the spiritual light. And so this is again suggesting to Dante that there are people here who have the light of this intellect. They can contemplate something of God, and that radiates within them and so brings light even to this dark place. And sure enough, a group of poets walk towards them. They're the great poets of the ancient world, led by Homer in particular, of which Virgil is one as well. And Dante goes and joins the group of poets, making six altogether, and they welcome him. They say, you too have the name of poet, and so we welcome you into this place. Having the name means sort of sharing the spirit, sharing the charism, sharing the understanding, the capacity, to kind of embrace and work with the truths that poetry tries to disclose. So this is to honour the wisdom inherent in poetry, which the great poets such as Homer, such as Virgil, and now such as Dante too, have managed to see and to express and to bring that light into the world. And so now they carry that light into hell. Dante hadn't expected this. It's the first thing that's revealed to him. And there's indicators that this means really something quite substantial, because Homer, for example, is described as having poetry that soars like an eagle. Now, the eagle's going to turn out to be a very important creature in the Divine Comedy, because, according to the mythology, the eagle could soar so high in the sky with eyes that were so steady and piercing that it could gaze even into the sun, which is to say it could bear the sight of the divine, could bear the sight of God in those high heavens. So the eagle is a semi-divine creature. And the implication, therefore, is that Homer has semi-divine qualities too. Something of the divine, you might say, incarnated even in Homer's poetry all those many centuries before Christ. Then Dante says that when they got together and they moved through this divine light, they discussed things which he's not going to tell us now, which are best kept silent. Now, I think this is an intimation that they were discussing secrets, and they're the kind of things that can't fully be understood unless you've gone through the shift of consciousness, unless you've undergone the initiation that can enable you to understand them. As it were, you've got to go through the descent fully in order to be able to realise what they're saying. Otherwise, you're going to be left feeling, but look, can people be saved in hell or can't they? Is this about individual freedom and sight, or is it about God's love that's going to reach down and save everybody? You've got to tolerate the polarities, the opposition, in order to really know the secrets from within, so that when you speak them with understanding. And Dante is saying at this point, what we discussed amongst the poets can't really be expressed now, but the implications, these secrets will be revealed further on. They keep walking, and as they walk, Dante says they see a beautiful castle with many walls. They walk through the gates of the castle and see a beautiful garden, green grass growing. It's a very, very pleasant place. Again, hugely significant, because gardens recall the Garden of Eden. The Garden of Eden is going to be a very important arrival point in the purgatory. So this is saying something of heaven does actually exist in hell. There's something of the pleasantness, the delight, the ease that can be even there, shared by those who have this kind of inner illumination. And sure enough, at that point, a lot of pagan and Muslim divines, you might say, start to appear in a sort of procession before Dante's eyes. They include some of the great names amongst the Greeks, including the philosophers. Aristotle is particularly celebrated. Remember, Aristotle in Dante's time was fairly new on the scene. He'd appeared back in the West in the 13th century. Dante's writing at the beginning of the 14th, and had given a whole new lease of life in figures like Thomas Aquinas to the Christian dispensation. So Aristotle is heavily praised by Dante. We've already seen him probably remembering Aristotle's remarks about justice being failed friendship. And of course, Aristotle was known at that time in the West, not just in his own works, but through the figure of Averroes, who was the great Muslim commentator on Aristotle. In fact, if you read Thomas Aquinas will talk about the philosopher, unnamed, but meaning Aristotle, and the commentator, meaning the Muslim Averroes. So this is giving high praise to the Muslims as well, for the wisdom that they see. Again, raising this question, you know, who's going to be saved? What's this dispensation really about? If there's divine light, if it's sharing in but a part of God's insight and understanding, God's glory, a word that's used at this point, then surely that part means they must know something of the whole as well. The question is not fully answered at this point. But I think it's suggesting, you know, that hell is porous. It's suggesting that if you can tolerate standing between the opposites, holding on to the tension, not resolving it too quickly, then that can itself reveal the kind of wisdom of the descent. That's why the descent is really important. It's by going most fully into the difficulty of what's implied by even the notion of hell, not just abandoning it too quickly, not saying it's a kind of outrage to justice, which in a way it is, but remember, justice itself is not the full picture. Justice itself is a kind of a lesser form of love, turning to the law when love fails, turning to rules when wisdom can't fully move. So I think that's what this canto is really setting up. We've got to tolerate, as 21st century people who might find notions like limbo discreditable and unpalatable, sort of immoral, monstrous, hold on to notions about how freedom works together with love, about how will and turning towards what good sits against God's power that sustains all things, and see what we can find if we can hold that tension. Carl Jung would call it the transcendent function. Coleridge, the great romantic poet, would call it polarities, and that it's in the energy that the polarities create, form, a bit like the energy between two poles of a magnet and creating a field. That's where newness is revealed. That's where we actually grow and begin to ascend after the descent. Of course, Dante wasn't wrong about limbo. If he's reformed limbo himself by the figures he has in limbo and the light that's in limbo, the church too eventually abandoned limbo, not until 2007. So it leaves you wondering at the end of this canto as you read it in 2020, what else has Dante foreseen that the church is going to be catching up with, that people are going to be catching up with? What can we glimpse as we continue on the journey? But for now, it is about descent. And so after this moment of light, Dante says, we couldn't linger there for long. We had to continue our journey